We just live right now, man. It's going down, excited for the season. You know, we coming off a playoff win. I mean, you know, we had a couple wins.
Hello and welcome to episode 163 of Dear Diaries, a Milwaukee Bucks podcast presented by us, some staffers from Brew Hoop. I'm Riley Feldman here, as usual, one of your longtime hosts of Dear Diaries and Brew Hoop podcasts and et cetera, et cetera. I'm joined this week. It's a two-man game by Kyle Carr. Kyle, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm back from being in Chicago for the weekend. I went to a Chicago Bulls game. It was a wild time and... You know, the shift from watching a team that is struggling to figure out what they want to do and then watching Milwaukee Bucks later on, it's like, okay, the gulf in quality and plan, it is pretty stark. But shout out to the Bulls. They came back. They were down 22-1 at one point in the game. They beat the Miami Heat, so that was pretty great. It was a good time. So I got to say, like, United Center was pretty good. So good for at least the Bulls fans have something there. They just need to actually get a team that's worth a damn.
For those who you got very close to Benny the Bull. Now, it was not you who was screaming, think of the children. What was the context of a guy screaming at Benny the Bull's think of the children, if you can recall?
So what happened was Benny the Bull was giving a fan who was wearing a Kevin Love jersey, a Cleveland Cavalier Kevin Love jersey. Benny Bull
to it and remind who were they playing? The Miami Heat.
So the Miami Heat.
Cavs had nothing to do with the evening. Yes,
I guess Kevin Love's still there, so they were showing support for Kevin Love.
Okay, but Benny the Bull, that's true. Yep,
showing up, giving this person crap. Meanwhile, there's like this kid, like off to the side. There's this kid like wanting an autograph or something from Benny the Bull. And Benny is just not acknowledging this kid at all. And like Benny's not acknowledging any of the children in the section, just this one particular woman eventually gets her shirt that says, I think it has like Benny the Bull's like face on it, gives her that shirt. And then he just walks off. Yeah, Benny the Bull was not for the children in that particular time. But now that is a mascot that is just doing all sorts of shenanigans throughout the game. Like it is actually like, I'm pretty sure I was sitting there like, what the hell is he doing? Why does he have a giant bag of popcorn? Oh, he's swinging it around. Okay. And then he's like, and then another part of the section, like just high-fiving people and shooting tea. It's like, he's just, it's a distraction, but it's also like, do you ever sit down?
Your heart goes out to the arena cleanup crew when Benny the Bull gets out the bag of popcorn, just starts whipping corn everywhere in the stands.
I was just saying, I was like, I would feel bad. Like, that's going to be a pain in the ass to sweep up.
And you know Benny the Bull. He's not for the children. He's probably not for the cleaning crew. He's probably not for the janitorial staff either. So
probably not for the union either. Yeah, you know what? I don't think... I think Benny the Bull is looking out for Benny the Bull only.
We respect the hell out of Benny. We had a good time in Chicago. Got to see some non-Bucks basketball. And like you said, get that with while I was this weekend last weekend I didn't even get to mention in the podcast I had my first gym membership I've ever had in my whole life. I signed up for it. My wife got me a good hookup, so I just wanted to give it a piece. Getting cold out there in the Twin Cities like a couple of weeks ago, and I said I'm not strong enough to do this anymore. But I was like, I'm not strong enough to go outside, but I can go inside and I can work out there. So strongly encourage those who are thinking about it, go for it. It's good to maintain your fitness over the winter. So that's my PSA this week.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, getting a gym membership and working out in the winter is much needed.
Yes, it's necessary. And then you get to watch Kyle absolutely kill it at Orange Theory. But another team that's killing us, if you want to say us, Brew Hoop as a whole. This was the week, Kyle, that Adrian Griffin won. Adrian Griff win, whatever you want to say. We go through, the Bucks get blown, the doors blown off them by the Orlando Magic. Come back, win four straight. Let's be honest, not the greatest competition in the world. I'll just run through the scores real quick. So they start the week, they beat the Bulls 118, 109. They're at home for that one. Then they head to play the Raptors. Giannis misses the game, but no matter up to that point, his player was 128-112. Another in-season tournament game. 130-99, the final score in that. Probably a little flattering on the back end. The Bucks kind of pulled away late, but it was a little, you know, the Hornets were somewhat pesky until the end. And then the final game of the week, most impressive game of the week of the season so far, especially on a back-to-back coming home from the road, 132-125 over the Dallas Mavericks. The Bucks winners of four straight, 9-4 on the season. As of recording, I believe they are the third seed in the Eastern Conference. Kyle, good week for the Bucks. What did you learn about the Milwaukee Bucks this week?
I have two things. The first one, maybe let's all take a breather. Let's stop overreacting. I think this was a week where it shows maybe jumping the gun on things might be a bit premature. As our site learned the hard way.
Yeah.
So that's probably the main one. Let's just like chill. Let whatever hot takes we think we have, let's give it more than a couple weeks. So that's the first thing. The other thing, and I think for me, like what this week really highlighted was what Malik Beasley can bring to the Bucks, and when Malik Beasley is on, this Bucks team especially looks like this is why he can be a really good fifth starter. I know we've had shouts for Jay Crowder, I know we've had shouts for Marjan, I know we've had shouts for Andre Jackson Jr., but Malik Beasley showed this week like, okay, when he is on, this is the ideal thing that he can do. He hits threes. He's giving you enough effort on defense. It seems as though this is probably the best week he's had in his career. I mean, the Toronto game, he was just, I think he had what 7-8 threes in that game. He then turned around, hit some big threes when the Bucks needed him to, and against the Hornets. Not as much of an impact against the Mavericks, but that was fine. Like, I think though, the biggest thing for me that I noticed was just like how much better the offense looks when Malik is able to hit those threes, because then it opens up the lane. And especially in the Toronto game, Damian Lillard was able to just drive and kick and drive and get draw fouls, drive and get to the drive and get layups. Like, it allowed that so to open up so much more. And I think part of it is also like no Giannis as well. So it kind of forced everyone else. It kind of forced it like you could space it out a little bit more, not having to pack the paint as much without Giannis there. But it was still very impressive. Like, you think of that Toronto game, that was just, it was like the whole time it was just Damian Lillard basket, Malik Beasley basket, Damian Lillard basket, Malik Beasley basket. It went back and forth in that way. So I think the biggest thing that I gathered was, yeah, Malik Beasley, like, this is what he can bring. And this is the optimal, what if we could say, like, what can we call a good Malik Beasley show? And like, this week was that. And this week is prop. This is why I was like, okay, this is why you take a chance on him. This is why he's going to be a big piece of what Milwaukee does, whether it's in regular season or if we get to the postseason, like what he can bring and what he can do. He showed us what that is.
Not bad on defense either. You know, he continues throughout the whole season. He's given a lot of effort on defense. Maybe the lapses, maybe the connection isn't fully there, but between him and Dame, and I'm okay with Dame if he wants to take a little bit more off because he's doing so much on the offensive end, especially this past week. But credit to Malik as well, like expending a lot of energy on defense and then also hoisting shots. It that timely in the Raptors game, Chris Middleton scores 11 points, Bobby 10 points, Andre Jackson Jr. doesn't score at all. Bobby with 18 off the bench, good for him. Cam 13. Off the bench, but yeah, 30 points for Malik Beasley against the Raptors and 37 for Lillard. Like, it's those two guys, and they were the ones who powered out the huge lead, and then they can kind of coast us away. It got a little dicey in the fourth quarter, but Griffin calls a timely timeout with like 4 or 5 minutes left in the fourth, and the team comes back out, responds really strong, and wins the game. Hornets, the Bucks go down, I believe it's like 37-28 after the first quarter. I can pull that up, but they were down by like close to double digits. And then the second quarter comes through and like Malik Beasley goes nuts and he gets his little shimmy dance that he can do. And it's like, it's that sort of quick fire offense that's what you expect Gunner guys like Beasley to bring. And he does that. And he can score like a little bit all three levels. He's mostly a 3-point shooter, but he's competent off the dribble, like driving to the paint, driving kicks off of pick and pops, whatever it is. Like he can do a whole bunch of whether or not Lillard is too iffy defensively to be sustainable, depending on the playoffs, we'll have to see. But this was the week that turned around. People are kind of questioning, like, okay, can we sustain how bad this defense is, even if Malik is like scoring a decent amount? But he proved like if you score a whole bunch, it doesn't really matter what the defense is. And the defense has slowly improved this past week. We're up to 22nd in the league after this past week in play. So, yeah, I agree, Malik Beasley. Do you think, though, it was keyed by the Andre Jackson Jr. starting opportunity? Was he feel the breath down his neck a little bit? Andre takes one shot. He takes a shot in that game, so he had to defer to Bees, but...
Look, Andre Jackson Jr. came in and started. Everyone was asking for it, and I think that was a wake-up call from Malik Beasley, because, and I mean, everything was falling, like, Marjan gets hurt, Jay Crowder's out. It's kind of like this two-man battle now, and it's like, all right, best man wins, and Malik Beasley decided to step up and, at least for the next week, he has earned that right to still be that starting two guard. But Andre Jackson definitely is applying the pressure.
And I like the contrast. If you think of Malik, what he did this week, like Grayson Allen would have good games where he could score a whole bunch, but my man was not a walking potentially 30 bucket on a given night. Malik Beasley's that. That's a totally different level of that's like a true shooting guard. You know, Grayson Allen was like a guardy guy who was just kind of like he's like the Dante replacement, like toolsy guy who kind of just fits in and can hit threes, which is good. But Malik Beasley is a different kind of beast offensively. And for a team that continues to sort of still be a work in progress on the defensive end, this will go into my point in a minute, but you can just boat race teams. If you want to get into a sprint, there's worse players to have than Malik Beasley, Damian Lillard, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Chris Middleton, and like Brooke Lopez or Bobby off the bench or Campaign off the bench or Jay Crowder when he comes back. Like if you want to get into sprints, the Bucks can win sprints. That's abundantly clear. They won a sprint against the Mavs. Like they dropped, you know, 132 on them. They can win sprints.
And that was the thing. It was like they drop 132 on the Mavs. They drop 130 on the Hornets, 128 against the Raptors. Like it was kind of a, you can score four, we'll score five. We will outscore you. And I think that's one of the things with Adrian Griffin's system that he had wanted. He wants this team to play faster. He wants him to be more go, go, go. And yes, it's still like, can it really be done? Can it be sustained long enough with an older roster? But we are also seeing when it's go, 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 and when you have the offensive talent that you do, yes, you can kind of go in and sure, you're allowing 125. The Mavericks are a good offensive team. So them scoring 125, that's to be expected. And a lot of it was just Luka and Kyrie getting hot. It happens. But when you're able, and it's not just, you know, like it, we kind of saw this week, like it was kind of a variety where against the Bulls, it was more Giannis. Against the Raptors, it was Dame and Beasley. Against the Hornets, it was, again, kind of more Dame and Beasley. Against the Mavericks, it was Giannis and I'm trying to think, like, I guess, yeah, Damian Lillard had 27 points, but it was like, again, another Giannis one. But it was like Pat Connaughton showed life, you know, against the Mavericks. He's showing life again. Bobby Portis in the Bulls game and some other games, he shows life. So it is one of those where it doesn't matter what the Bucks do defensively. If their offense can keep them in games, then we've seen. We have yet to see Milwaukee play four good quarters of defense. And they haven't done that, and now they're figuring out how to win. I think it really speaks to this offense and the ability that in the ways that it can score, as opposed to in the past where it was kind of like, all right, maybe someone gets hot from three, and Giannis just has to drop 30 to 40 points every game, and maybe Chris Middleton can chip it with like 20. And then you just hope that Drew has a good shooting game.
Yep. Yeah, in the past, it was like, okay, Giannis will have his numbers, and then it's see which of Drew and Chris show up, and then pray one to two role guys also have a good night. Like, that was the mainstay. And the defense was so good that that could... But then we got into the playoffs, and we know the story there. So I think at this point, I'm probably happier to have like what looks like the makings of an elite offense, and then we'll try and slap together a defense as the season goes. I'll just jump into the thing that I learned this week, which is not surprising, is the most obvious thing in the world and exactly what we expected. If Damian Lillard plays up to his potential as an offensive player, we're probably in a pretty good place. I liked watching the Mavs game and then the NBA, I don't know which studio show was it, but it was the NBA TV studio show. And they were showing some clips. It was like Greg Anthony, another guy. They were doing clips of Dame and Giannis floor together. It's like flashing, okay, here's where this pick and roll, how it's working. If even if Giannis is slipping the picks, he still steps far enough away to operate in that space. So it you know, you can't run through Giannis. You still have to kind of go around, and then Giannis moves quick enough to open up this possibility. Or even just the threat of Dame, like a quick handoff, dribble handoff, and that gets the easy switch because you can't just let Dame free off the dribble handoff. And then Giannis gets into good position and Dame gets it back to him. Like, you start to see where Dame fits in, how these two can play together. And then I think low-key, the Raptors game, like forcing it upon Dame, because Chris is still on a minutes restriction, they're sticking to that throughout. Giannis is sitting the game out. Dame has to do it, and he steps up to it. Like, Beasley was there, but he's like a microwave cooker. We haven't seen Dame as like the takeover guy until late in games, and he's had great clutch numbers throughout the season. But I wonder if the Raptors game was the one that kind of forced him to finally take that step forward. And then into the Hornets game, it was interesting. Giannis did not take a lot of shot attempts, but he was working really hard to create for others throughout the game. Mm-hmm. So Dame still is like the lead point of attack guy, and then Giannis is trying to fit in a little bit more. And that was just the question in the first probably month of the season, was how much can Giannis adjust to what Dame does and what everybody else needs around him. This was a great week again for Giannis of like showing he could facilitate and be effective in the Hornets game, and then like you said, in the Mavs game and the Bulls game, he steps forward and it's like, okay, this is the Giannis is going to carry us most of the way. That's totally fine. Like that's the principles of it. So not crazy that Dame Lillard playing well does a lot for us. I'll just read his numbers from the past four games. It's a little bit above average. He's shooting 39.4 from the floor, 35% from three. He's taken 8.8 free throw attempts in the past four games. He's hit 94.3% of them. 8.8 assists, 3.8. You know, I mean, he could probably continue to lift the scoring like that. That's not a doubt whatsoever, but he's almost averaging a double double off scoring and assisting other guys. That's probably the exact right place they want him. So very encouraged about the offense. It's going to continue to be a work in progress, but this is the first week where it's like, okay, I start to see a lot of the optionality start to click a little bit more. Even if the defense was a little iffy, like I said, we didn't have four quarters of good defense at any point necessarily.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Dame's offense, it was kind of, and I mentioned it in my weekly wrap-up, was him getting to the rim just opens everything up. And a lot of the times, it's as simple as Brook just comes up, sets the screen, and if Dame gets a full head of steam, it just opens everything. And that's something that we haven't seen from a point guard in a very long time. And I think the Toronto game was kind of the peak of that, of when he gets that down, like, head of steam. It's a little bit different than Giannis's head of steam. Like, Dame's is kind of it's quick and you can't react fast enough to it. While with Giannis is, you can react, but he is still stronger and quick enough that you, unless you're going to flop over, it's hard to stop it. But with this one, it was like the Raptors one. It was just simply, you got the full head of steam and then you can either get the layup or kick it out to Beasley. And I think that is something that haven't really seen from Dame in the other games in terms of getting everyone else involved. And I think a lot of it is, you know, he's still trying to settle in. He's also making sure that he can create enough for himself, which is makes sense. Like, especially when he gets a shot off the dribble from three, that is something that he is really good at. you want him to do things that he is really good at. But now we're starting to see the three levels of scoring that we know he can do. While before it was kind of like, okay, especially when it was like in the clutch, it was more get to the foul line or hit a three that was absolutely needed. And now we're starting to see the three levels of scoring. And I think that's going to make things a little bit easier for Giannis, just because, like you said, it gives Giannis that chance to kind of take over at the end of the game, especially the Mavericks and Bulls game, and it works. And I think the other hidden part is in the first quarter, especially Bobby Portis seems to do a lot of his damage in the first, like in the first half. Like Bobby's contributions kind of take off when one of Giannis or Dame sits on the bench. And that's something I didn't really realize with the Bucks offense until recently. It's like, oh yeah, Bobby really shows out in the first quarter in the second quarter. And then it's not as though his thing gets reduced, but we start seeing if the other role guys can do what they need to early on. And then you just step aside and let Giannis and Dame do what they need to in the clutch in fourth quarter. And I think that's probably the plan. I think that's more of like a plan of how they approach the playoffs, more so than just trying to get guys to gel. So it's like, okay, this is what we're going to try and do when we get to crunch time, come playoff time, or in bigger games.
Yeah. And I like the idea of get these guys kind of started in the second. And then I've noticed as well, Griffin has been very consistent keeping Dame on the bench for a good chunk of the start of the fourth quarter, usually, yeah, just to save him for those final couple of minutes. When Chris Middleton is off his minutes restriction, that's where like the Middleton Giannis lineups are going to thrive, is when you can throw those guys out there. Then you throw Dame back on, and then you give Giannis a little bit of a mid-quarter breather, and then you have all three of them kind of close it. And that'll be a challenge for Griffin to stack it as he goes along. But in a week in which he was missing Jay Crowder, Marjan, like halfway through the Raptors game, who else is he missing? He's also missing Chris partially on the minutes restriction.
Giannis on the Wednesday game.
So we're missing quite a number of guys, and yet in spite of that, the lineups have been pretty solid. Like against the Mavs, we were able to get a tune out of your guy, AJ Green. Like he goes out there, he hits a couple of jumpers, and
there we go.
11 minutes of play. Yeah. We see the vision. So,
well, there's also like being on the back to back, I'm sure made Griffin cognizant of that as well, since they had just played in Charlotte and then probably had to fly back. So getting more other guys involved. The one thing I am curious about though is Cameron Payne. He is doing well, but it seems like lately his minutes have kind of taken more of the dip, and it's probably getting closer to like the 20-minute mark, which I don't know. Do you think that's too little, or is that something that maybe needs to be increased?
I think it's probably just about right. So it was interesting. I read an article where both Malik Beasley and Cam Payne, they're in the top 10 players from last season to this season who have had the largest drop in usage percentage. And yet they both have like 15% jumps in their true shooting percentage. So to me, that indicates they're getting shots at the exact right spots and they're not trying to force too much. I think with Cam Payne, the concern is if you're trying to ask him to do too much, I'm not sure how much he's able to like create off the dribble for himself. The shot selection is a little questionable, but if he's out there as the guy with Giannis, obviously Giannis is going to end up with the ball, or Chris, and those guys are going to create mostly, and then Cam can kind of be the bailout guy or like another shooter on the perimeter. So I think it's probably about right. He's not like Jeff Teague level by any stretch. I think 20 minutes is perfectly adequate for him. We might see a little bit increased depending on if Dame needs more rest. And those campaign starter minutes are a little iffy, like the Pacers game 2 weeks ago, but I think it's okay at like 20-ish minutes a game.
Yeah, I think it's more like the either campaign starting minutes, which probably will only happen if Dame is not playing, but also like the we saw like a lot of Dame and campaign like lineups together, and I don't think that utilizes either of them pretty well. And it seems like Griffin has kind of shied away from that. And I think that also has helped the offense as well. It's like, okay, you don't have two guys that are really most effective when they have the ball in their hand. And with campaign, it's like, can't really do as much off ball. Like with Lillard, you can do more, have him go off ball, like set screens for him and stuff like that. But with Payne, it's like, kind of just camp him on the corner and hope for the best.
Yeah, I was just looking. So Javon Carter last season as the main like point guard off the bench, he averaged 22.3 minutes on the season. This year so far, Cam Payne is at 18 minutes flat average. So like, I'm trying to think, did I think it was too much Javon Carter last year? No. Actually, everybody was kind of hoping you'd get a little bit more Javon Carter. So
we were asking for more of that.
But that's because we were just desperate for like something different than what we were running out there. So I don't know, if you boosted Cam a couple more minutes, I'm sure that would be fine. Right now, Dame is averaging 33.4 minutes a game. If you were able to dial him back just a little bit, they'll find that equilibrium. But I think Cam is probably playing just about the right amount of minutes overall. Okay. But yeah, he's not a starter. Yeah. And that's perfectly fine because he was not signed to be a starter. He's perfectly fine as the backup guy off the bench. Trying to think, was there anything else from this week that we wanted to kind of highlight at all? Here's what I would say. Big shout out to the team for fixing that transition defense. I think I just looked at the numbers for our averages. Our steal numbers, our number of steals per game is down to 7.2. That's 20th in the league. So it's, that's dropped, and it's usually in that kind of statistic is very faint. The changes can be a big league-wide change or your ranking change. So we dropped down in that. Our offensive rebounding is god-awful. We're 29th in the league on that. But that seems to suggest we're not trying, like, either we're not fighting on purpose or we don't have that dog, as you have already indicated. Our defensive rebounding is almost top 10. Like, we've seen increases in the right areas. I liked that the transition defense really dialed back this week. Very rare. I'm trying to think of like many possessions that it was just totally like we were getting absolutely burnt on the break. And that is a credit to the team and Adrian Griffin for making that emphasis change. It got dicey in the fourth quarter of the Raptors game because we started going to it again. That was the only time where
I was like, that's when it was kind of getting a little bit too cute. Like one stretch where I was like, they're regressing. They're regressing. Yes. But
yeah, they tried to go back to it, but I thought they switched back off of that after Griffin called the timeout and then they saw the victory home. So I hope we continue to learn from all of that. It is fine in stretches to try and do that really aggressive, like full courts, try and beat the contest right away off of the defensive rebound, the opponent defensive rebound, but we don't have the legs. We don't have the horses to try and run that as part of the base scheme. So it looks like they've gotten rid of that, which is a major credit to the team, Adrian Griffin, and hopefully they continue to execute. So I should give that a shout out from this past week.
And I think a lot of it goes back to when I was saying, like, they didn't look like they're giving a shit and not having that dog. It was like that right there is a great example of putting in a little effort makes a huge difference. And getting back on defense, that's an effort thing. Like, that's not schematic. That's not like, yes, there is like trying to gamble for the steals, but part of that is also like, you got to care. And I think that is one of those things where you're putting in that emphasis on it. The offensive rebounding, if you're not going to get offensive boards and get back on defense. So yeah, I do credit that. I also think limiting fouls was a big issue against the Magic, and they seem to have also dialed back on that. And I think part of it is just a better base defense and not being a turnstile on defense allows it. So then you're not having to recover and then forcing refs to make that call. So I think that also contributed as well. So I think there is signs of life and improvement on the defensive side. And part of that is just, getting back on defense and not fouling.
Yep. If it can hold together enough to let the offense go to work, that's a winning formula. Yep. In the regular season, that'll win a lot of games. It might not be as effective in the playoffs, and that's something we'll keep an eye on going long term. But for the next couple of months, that's a working formula. We can work with that. That's got us to 9-4, for God's sake.
So, I was going to say, it worked this past week, so no complaints here.
Yeah, no complaints. Okay. I think it's time we move on to Buck the Host. Thankfully, nobody has anything to criticize us from last week. That's right. From the last episode of Dear Diaries specifically, which thank you for clarifying. So what we're going to talk about this week, it's probably the most important game in terms of early season narrative, in terms of high drama, everything going into it. The Bucks go to Boston on Wednesday to face the Celtics. I'm going to set the ground first just so we can know where we're going into. So like I said, Bucks are 9-4, third place in the East. Celtics are 10-2 on the season, first in the East. Offensive rating 120.0, they're fourth in the league, and then a defensive rating of 107.4, third in the league, with a league leading plus 12.7 net rating. Let me read through Drew Holiday's old friend Drew Holiday's numbers just so we know. He started all 12 games he's played in, averaging 34.2 minutes. Hilarious. He is scoring only 13.4 points a game, 7.6 rebounds, 5.3 assists, and just 1.8 turnovers, shooting 35% from three. Kyle, let me start the conversation with this. One, what are you most looking forward to in the game? Like, what makes you most excited? What are you going to keep an eye on specifically in the game? And then two, obviously a victory would be really, really good, but what are the conditions coming out of this game? Like, the Bucks do X and you say, okay, that was like, that's an encouraging performance, win, lose, whatever. Like, what's a key thing that you would kind of be looking for? What are the conditions of it being a successful outing against the Celtics?
It kind of ties into each other. For me, I want to know how this defense does against the Celtics, just because, and I said it earlier in the year, like, this is a kind of defense where it might be better against a Boston Celtic, a Philadelphia 76er, a Miami Heat, where the playmaking ability from the primary ball handler is not going to hurt you as much. Because we saw against Atlanta. We saw it against Dallas. I was expecting it to happen again, Charlotte, where it's just like a team with a guy that can pass the ball and make the plays. That is where this defense could possibly get torched. And then when you're playing the Celtics, who the ball's primarily going to be in Tatum's hands or Brown's hands or Drew's hand, like, it's not, and they can do some playmaking, but that's not their main thing. So I'm kind of curious how the defense will do. And that's what also will make it more encouraging for me, is if the Bucks lose, I would hope that it's because it was just an off shooting game from a Dame or Giannis, whatever. Like, it's just an off shooting game, but the defense keeps them in it for the long term. So that's kind of like the two things I'm hoping for. And in terms of like what would constitute as like, yes, I feel good about it. I think the other thing that would make me feel good is if Milwaukee, by the way, I need Milwaukee to show some fluid. I want Milwaukee to show the fluidity on offense that we have seen this past week, because I think more than anything, what has hurt Milwaukee against Boston in the past is Boston's defense seems to be able to dial it. And again, part of it is they would be able to completely key in on Giannis and then just say, he's going to get his, but no one else is beating us. And that has burned Milwaukee in the past, and happened in that playoff series where it was kind of like, all right, Giannis is still going to get 30, 35 points, but no one else can hit a shot, so we're not worried. And I want Milwaukee to be able to have, again, if Malik Beasley can repeat what he did last week, great. But what I want to see is Chris Middleton on that minutes restriction going to, can he do enough? Can Bobby Portis in that first half do enough? Can Pat Connaughton do enough? Like, I want to see the other guys be able to do enough so that when it gets to the time that it needs to, Giannis and Dame can do what is needed to either get Milwaukee the win or keep them in the game enough. So that would be the second thing. But the primary thing is going to be, how does this defense do against Boston? Because I'm of the belief that this defense is built to specifically counter anything that Boston can do.
Is it hackneyed for me to say the thing I'm most looking forward to is seeing the Drew Dame matchup?
Oh, no.
Drew's yes. Yeah. Okay. All right. the highest of theater possible. The three options are, it turns out really well for us, we get to be obnoxious. It turns out really well for Celtics and Drew, and they get to be obnoxious. Or it's just like a muddle, and then everybody gets to claim that they won in all of it. I think it'd just be. I'm trying to think of like how to word it. Like, does playoff Drew show up? And does that mean like good playoff Drew, or like playoff Drew that we're used to? Does he try to force it too much? Does he play within himself?
Playoff Drew on offense show up?
So that's the matchup I'm most looking forward to. I just, the thing that would make me feel good coming out of this is not so much like Dame gets one over on Drew or Derek White or whoever's guarding Dame. It's I want to see Giannis dominate the Al Horford Kristaps Porzingis matchup. I'm tired of Al Horford continuing to be like sort of in the way. This has to end at some point. I just, if we come out of it, even if we get beat down, like if it's somewhat close and Giannis has a really good game against the Al Horford and Kristaps Porzingis pairing, which I have to think is somewhat likely. I'm curious. They'll probably throw Horford on Giannis and see how it goes. They cannot imagine they're stupid enough to throw Porzingis on Giannis, but we'll see. And I don't even know if Horford's, I assume he's still starting. Let me go even.
I don't think so.
No, he only started 3 games this season. Okay. Well, that's going to be, I mean, Giannis has to feast essentially from the start then.
Right. Like Drew is going to Porzingis on him. And that, well, that's also the thing. It's like, are they going to put Drew on Giannis? And then like Derek White on Dame. Cause that was the other thing I was wondering.
Yep. And then like, can Chris, so that's going to be, I mean, it's tied to yours. Like, this is going to be a real quick chess match here. Like, okay, what's going to be the matchup? What's going to be the initial defense? And then which of our guys can break through that first? Because if none of them can, we're in for a late night. If one of them can early, then that, opens up the entire game plan from the rest of the way. But those first, like, 5 minutes, you just got to try and weather the storm and hope one of the guys pops off. And that's why it's going to be high drama, because either you're going to know you have a real good game on your hands 5 minutes in, you're like, oh man, this is going to be hard to watch. So I'm praying it's obviously more of the former than the latter, but I just want to see Giannis dominate. I think they'll probably do Porzingis early, find out that that's a mistake. Like a lot of teams that have had Porzingis on have found out that's a mistake. And then, yes, curious, do they throw Drew on him? Do they bring Al off the bench right away? Like, how does Giannis's presence force the Celtics to hopefully adjust?
I wouldn't be surprised if either Drew or Tatum starts on Giannis, because you can put Kristaps on Giannis, but the problem is who the hell's guarding Brooke? And then this is where it kind of goes, okay. The first 5 minutes doesn't even have to be Giannis and Dame like trying to if they're putting whoever on Brooke and it's not Porzingis, give Brooke the goddamn ball and just let him sit in the post and then force Boston to call up Al Horford. So then at least that's where kind of the chess is going to be interesting. It's like, where does Brooke Lopez fit into all this? Not only from an offensive standpoint, but defensively, just because does Giannis want to guard Tatum? Because it seems like Giannis wants to take on more of that. So is he going to be on Tatum? And then you got Malik Beasley most likely on Jaylen Brown. I don't know. Like, it's interesting how defensively, but then again, there's kind of like Brooke's probably going to do a little bit more. He's not going to be able to do as much of that drop if Porzingis is out there hanging out on the 3-point line.
Yeah, this is why people circled this matchup as like the postseason matchup to look for, because there's so many different counters that each team could pull out. Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, Brooke is sort of counteracted by Kristaps, but if Giannis is absolutely working him, then they have to pull Al Horford out. But Al Horford also spaces the floor a little bit. Where does Bobby fit in? Can Bobby, like, he's had a great past week, like great off the bench. Can Bobby be the one that steps up to help like weather the storm? It's going to be it's always exciting, somewhat nerve-wracking playing the Celtics, to be perfectly honest, just because we do kind of get worked somewhat often, or it's last season we either like barely edged it out or got absolutely beat down. So I'm hoping for something a little bit closer. Obviously a victory in any sense at all is massive. It does not matter how you do it. Does not matter how good you look doing it. A win is a win. A win on the road early season, to like, especially with how high the Celtics were flying and how average we looked prior to this past week.
But it's weird because it's not like the Celtics they've won 6 games in a row, but the last few, it's not as though they're just absolute, like they were dog walking people earlier. Like, I think they won like 114-98 against the Knicks last Monday, but it was like
they dropped 150 on the Pacers to start the season. That happened. Yeah.
They beat the Raptors, I think, by like 23. So like there was definitely a stretch where the Celtics were just dog walking people. But lately, the last few games, like they beat the Grizzlies by 2. They beat the Raptors in the in-season tournament by 3 points. They beat the Sixers on the road, which that is an impressive win. Won that by 10. So it's like maybe things are starting to slow down a little bit more for Boston. I say that, and then they'll probably just go and just obliterate the Hornets because why not? But I am wondering, like, yes, they got off to such a hot start, but is that hot start going to start cooling down later on? And is what we're seeing just a matter of things were clicking at the right time, or maybe this is going to be maybe the Celtics team has a little bit more cracks than we're able to see.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm looking at the roster. Frankly, they have what looks to me a 7-man rotation.
Yeah.
Because Sam Hauser is like a gunner guy. So it's Al Horford and Sam Hauser off the bench. Peyton Pritchard, who's got paid, LOL. And is not a good player, or at least he hasn't shown to be so far this season. And then Luke Kornet's like their deep backup big man. They're young enough that they can run him into the ground, but Drew is he's 33. Al Horford's literally 37 years old. They might be able to win a war on any given night if they just throw like a 6-7-man rotation. But until they acquire somebody else or somebody else really kind of steps forward, that's a pretty shallow group to run. So even then, if they just run like 6 or 7 main guys and they get the win, it's still not the end of the world because you just kind of hope attrition takes its toll over time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it should be a lot of fun. It should be exciting. And I feel good about the Malik Beasley. Just force Jalen to go left. I know it's easier said than done, but just do what you got to do.
Just do that. Well,
yeah, just do Yo, make me an NBA coach. Just do that.
It's not rocket science. Everyone knows what needs to be done. I think that's also where Giannis guarding Tatum is going to be huge because Tatum has been good this year. And if you can take Jason Tatum out of this game, that will... If they can take Jason Tatum out of the game, I will feel very, very confident.
Yeah, because it's going to be tough for any of the other guys to really burn you. I mean, Kristaps has been good scoring, and Jaylen Brown is like decent, but Jalen's always kind of been a little hot and cold, it seems to me.
Like, there are definitely guys that can get hot. Like, Derek White can get hot. Sam Hauser can get hot, but
yeah,
it kind of starts.
It'll be interesting. Yeah, it'll be interesting. They have the highest 3-point attempt rate in the league. That'll be curious. I'll be curious. And we're designed, like you said, everything's kind of designed to trying to throw that off. So if we continue to be able to contest, to close out shooters, everything will be interesting. So I encourage, obviously you don't have to hear us shill for TNT or ESPN or wherever it's played, but tune in, watch. It'll be a really exciting game.
It's going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Miscellaneous time.
Yep. Let's do it.
Okay. Quick one. Couple of rapid fire questions, not much this week. First one for you. Have you ever been to Trader Joe's?
Yes. I don't go there frequently. There is one in Madison, but I have been to one. I get why people like it. It's just not close enough for me to do consistently.
Okay. So people who go to Trader Joe's, we're a Trader Joe's family, it's just up and around the corner. Notorious that the place either has the greatest snacks ever or some of the worst snacks you've ever had, like the most crazy things that just miss all the time. Do you have like a memorable random like weird item you tried from Trader Joe's that was good? Was there a snack that jumps out to your mind at all or no?
It's not a snack. It was like a peanut butter thing. I don't know, like they had this peanut butter, but it wasn't peanuts, it was something else, and it's gonna bother me. I think it was like a cookie butter.
Yes, that sounds right. Yes.
Yeah, they have that. That was delicious. Like that was phenomenal, and I need to get that again, but that's probably, I think that's like the only thing. Otherwise, there was a soup that was pretty good, like their like loaded potato soup.
Okay. I want to give a shout out here to the Everything But the Bagel kettle chips at Trader Joe's. Goated, one of the best chips you'll ever have. Highly recommend to people. Go grab those chips. Okay. We have no real indication from the team how much longer this is going to go on, but if you were to guess, how much longer until Chris is off of his minutes restriction? And by office minutes restriction, I'm going to say he's routinely touching anywhere from 28 to 30 minutes a night. Let's say 30 minutes a night.
After the All-Star break.
Okay. So
I feel like that's a pretty, yeah, I feel like this is a slow roll into it. So I'm going to say after the All-Star break.
I know, like, if I was not thinking about it, I'd be like, wow, that's a really long time. And it is. But they're really, 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 really concerned about keeping Chris healthy. And he's been more than sufficient in the limited, like our friend David Dunn over on Teutonia World's preaching sixth man of the year, Chris Middleton. I don't think Chris is coming off the bench, but if he is down to like 20 to 25 minutes throughout, he can remain really efficient in that. And then it's on up to Griffin of trying to mix and match those limited minutes where it's most effective. And that'll be kind of a work in progress, but that's probably not the craziest after the All-Star break. And even then, I mean, he's
going to be also got the in-season tournament as well. So it's like, there's just more games. So easing all of that. So I that's why I'm thinking after the All-Star break, because by then the tournament's over and then you'll focus more on ramping up for the playoffs.
Okay. Next question. How concerned are you about Jay Crowder's return? Not so much that he's going to get back, because I think we all believe in that, but he was playing really well up to the injury. The issue, part of the issue with him last season, was he didn't have a full training camp. He came in, had to like kind of condition himself while playing. He's gonna have to do that sort of again. It'll be slightly different because he'll be in a training facility, but scale of 1 to 10, how concerned would you be about Jay being able to replicate his early season play when he comes back?
7.
Okay.
I have trust issues with that man. Like,
wrong co-host for this question.
I'm not sending him to Boxing Day. I'm not sending him to Turkey anymore. Like, we're now in Spain. He's earned a nice Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
But he's
still overseas. He's still not in the U.S. is what you're saying.
We're still putting him overseas, but we're putting him in nicer leagues at least. But I think it's just more, not just the he'll have to physically ramp up, but depending on, you know, how Marjan does when he gets back, how Andre Jackson Jr., his development, Malik Beasley, how he's doing, it's more the, is he, like, he'll definitely get chances and playing time to get back into it, but it is going to kind of be like, if he doesn't get going right away when he gets back, is that going to affect like everyone? Like, are they going to continue just trying throwing him out there? Is it going to be like, we got 3 other guys that can do it. Yeah. We don't need to have Jay Crowder like be fit and firing. So yeah, I'll say 6 or 7.
Okay. He's unique because he's really the only wing ish guy who can guard up in terms of like bulk of other guys. Andre Jackson Jr. and Marjan are pretty good. They're like guard wings and guard down, whereas Jay is one of the few guys that guards up. And so he will definitely have a role to play. And I think that's a big shame because that he's going to miss this much time, because he was like the optional reliable 3-and-D, true 3-and-D guy who could guard up. And that's somebody there's a reason why we acquired him last year to fill that role. He will have that role again. I'm probably also a 7 though. I'm worried about conditioning and things like that when he gets back. So get well, Jay, we're rooting for you sort of. And I thought that was really moving, Kyle, that you got him that Best Western reservation for his recovery.
We really got it. We got to give him the best of that, of what we can offer.
Yeah, that was very magnanimous of you. Okay. Final question this week. I feel like we've done Thanksgiving food a million times to Sunday, so I'm not going to ask that this week. I'll ask you this instead. Did you ever have to work midnight Black Friday at a retail place?
Thank goodness, no.
No, okay. No. Did you ever go Black Friday shopping?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I used to do like the camping out at Walmart and rushing in at 5 a.m. Like, absolutely. I did that. We joked that it was a family tradition of ours.
Yeah.
But I've never had to work retail, thankfully.
Okay. So what you're saying is Black Friday, you were not for the children that were also in the way on Black Friday.
It was all about me. It was all me. Not even my own brother. You know what? I'm sorry. Like, if you're not at my level, I'm going to leave you behind.
Yeah.
I got to get mine.
You know, like Kyle Cook, like Kyle get inside. Let me be me. Yeah. I worked at Kohl's, so I had to do the old midnight shift. And like, honestly, it wasn't even that bad. I mean, it was crazy. It was chaotic, but people aren't necessarily like swamping Kohl's per se. Like, I feel like a lot of people, they go for like the big splashy items, like big electronics purchases. Like
the TV, the video game. TV, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Kohl's, we don't have that. So, or not as much at that point. We didn't. So it just wasn't all, I mean, it's so busy, but not that swamped. It was fun. Like, you would work an 8-hour shift and they would fly by quicker than any other HR hour shift you'd ever work there. So, shout out Kohl's Cash, shout out 15-20-30. Massive respect. Open that Kohl's charge card, unless you shouldn't, in which case, please don't. All right, that's all I got for rapid fire this week. I don't have pen stuff. I will for next week. I got some new journals coming in, so we're going to have new content for me there. Kyle, it's not a film review this week, which is fine, because
we're aiming to try. I will have more coming back. I'm flying during Thanksgiving break, so I will have movie chances.
Very good. So in that case, what we're going to do is we're going to finish up the podcast with our weekly predictions. Outside of the Celtics game, a couple of gimmies this week, which is probably going to doom me and Adrian Griffin. We start tomorrow night, Monday night, tonight, when you guys are listening to this, at Washington Wizards, at the Wizards, and then obviously to Boston on Wednesday night versus the Wizards on Friday, which is an in-season tournament game. The Wizards are at the bottom of the group for that, so whatever, and the Wizards are obviously horrible. And then finally, versus the Blazers, Dame's team comes to town on Sunday. It is a matinee game, starts at 2:30 Central. Kyle, what is your prediction for the record this week?
Give me 4-0.
Yeah, that's what I wrote down earlier, too. Yeah.
And the weird thing, it's the Trailblazers game where I'm like, ooh, that's the one where I'm like, I'm concerned about this. It's a matinee on a Sunday. I don't know how that's going to go. I feel like there's going to be the letdown after the Celtics win. The Wizards are just bad.
Horrible.
If you're watching the Wizards, it's because you're wondering what dumb things are they going to do tonight, not for the actual quality of basketball. So both two wins against the Wizards should help. I do feel optimistic and confident against the Celtics. The Blazers one is the only one that slightly concerned me, but I'll say 4-0.
Are you worried about Dame being like Dame time the entire time, and it's just he gets 50 shots up or something?
There's a combination of this could be a poor Dame shooting game, and Giannis playing in matinee just never goes well. It's like that combo.
Yeah, it's an understandable concern. I'm gonna also say 4-0. What a difference a week of basketball makes, huh, folks? I do not think by any stretch we're gonna like blow out the Celtics. I think if we do win, it'll be by the skin of our teeth, but a win's a win, and that would be exciting to see anyhow. And yes, the other two teams we play, the Wizards twice, I mean, they're all trying to lose on purpose. Interesting, I read the Blazers they're really making offensive rebounds a point of emphasis, so that spells trouble for us, but I'll keep the hope. I'll keep the faith.
Yeah. It's just hard to know, like, who on the Trailblazers is really, because, I mean, it's DeAndre Ayton and a bunch of dudes.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, I don't know if Scoot Henderson's still hurt or something, but. I know he was, like, hurt, but yeah, it's basically DeAndre Ayton and a bunch of dudes. And
everybody knows if that was what you were going to do, if you were going to write down a team and say, okay, it's DeAndre Ayton and a bunch of dudes, you know what the situation is. You know what the assignment is. It's not going to be good. Okay. Well, very good. Congrats, Adrian Griffin, on surviving another week. Congrats on surviving the Brew Hoop curse. Wishing you all the luck in the world heading forward. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks for watching if you're watching on YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy Thanksgiving this coming week. And we'll probably be back next weekend after the fact to recap the Celtics game and much more besides. Thanks for listening, guys. Catch you again soon.